wheels flying and cars flipping, and when I got there, the gate was closed.
Drivers scrambled out of their cars before they stopped rolling. A.J. Foyt scales a 12-foot steel cable fence to join the spectators. Amazingly, no driver is injured, but of the 16 cars involved, 11 will race no more today. Newly designed fuel cells prevent fires, but the safety patrol sprays down cars as a precaution. The smoke-like foam covers the scene of one of the worst accidents in Indianapolis 500 history.
If I didn't hit anything, I figure I'm pretty lucky.
Luck is a point of view. A year's work lost is hard to take for those out of the race. These men are professionals and know the risks of racing. Yet when something like this does happen, they question why, like Dan Gurney.
Collectively, I don't know really who is to blame. I don't think you'll be able to blame it on any one person, but they're all using very, very poor judgment. It's not very difficult to drive down a little straight piece of track here with a few cars around. There shouldn't be any trouble at all. We're supposed to be good drivers, and it's I don't think they have the judgment of a flea, for all I'm concerned.
Foyt had this to say.
It was really ridiculous what happened, and just glad nobody got hurt real bad, and that's about all. I guess another year we'll have to wait. Right now I'm pulling for my team car that George Snyder drives, so maybe we can still bring in a victory.
For the cars that got through, the race is stopped until the track is cleared. For those who didn't, all that is left is the memory of the struggle just to get in the race. The story of each 500 starts on that warm spring day early in May when the track first opens for practice. Everything that moves at the Speedway is supervised by a technical staff headed up by Chief Steward Harlan Fengler, an ex-driver himself. For half a century, the assault on this track has been renewed each year. Veterans like Roger Ward, who has beaten the track twice in 15 years, still have a healthy respect for this treacherous old race course. Mario Andretti learned in 1 year that you can't give anything away to this track. Against a background of empty stands and only an occasional spectator, the drama begins. Jim Clark, 1965 winner and defending champion, is here with Colin Chapman of Lotus Cars. Clark and his American teammate, Al Unser, will drive under the ownership of a famous racing name, STP Oil Treatment. As the cars move down Gasoline Alley, the last check is made. With observers in place, safety equipment ready, the signal is go. And
the track is now open for practice.
This is the end of a long journey that may have begun in California or England or Texas or Canada. There are 79 entries, 79 variations in design, chassis, engine, suspension, and almost as many drivers, all hoping to find the right combination to put car and driver in the race. Here too, the sentimental favorite of 20 years, the Novi. Revived by Andy Granatelli, an ex-Indy driver himself, now president of STP. The wraps are off. The car builder's job is done. The mechanic's gone as far as he can go on the bench. Now, it's up to the driver to find out if the combination works on the track. This is one of the loneliest moments in sports. One man, alone in the cockpit, facing the unknown. But hold everything. An unidentified running object is on the course. The signal is hold until the track is clear.
Thank you.
still seek a faster, better way around, despite the hardships of broken metal, miscalculations, and bad luck. Incredible 167 miles per hour. Amazing both Jim Clark, the Flying Scot who started it all, and the American competition. In 1966, more than ever before, the 500 is truly international.
Those that come over here gain a great deal of respect for the American racing and the American drivers, and vice versa. And it's a wonderful thing for the sport, and I think that we'll see more of it. More European cars coming here as well, and I think we'll have American cars going to Europe, and the fans are going to come out on top.
Well, I must say that I came over to Indianapolis with a certain amount of reserve because I had heard so much about it, and perhaps not the best publicity, but this has been completely reversed for me. I must say that of all the races I've ever competed in, I've perhaps had more goodwill and hospitality over here than I have anywhere else.
It's a great thrill to have these people here, and the rookies, I think, have a little bit to learn about this racetrack because it is unique, but Graham Hill, who is one of my teammates, he's considered a rookie here because he hasn't yet competed. But a former world champion, you don't have to concern yourself too much about men like this.
There is more to this track racing that meets the eye. I understand there's quite a few things I've got to learn yet. I personally don't feel yet prepared for the race, and I think it'll be quite an interesting experience for me.
Here at Indianapolis, it is there's the one basic problem of getting through the very fast turns here, and therefore it becomes a very much more specialized job than it does in a road course in Europe. It's more of a problem getting the car set up to do what you wanted.
Yes, it's an entirely different type of race, and it's a different style of driving, and a 12-hour and 24-hour race. You don't run flat out like you do here.
Of course, now, the road racing was my first love.
Now,
and,
Raymond, go ahead,
I have to
please.
Learn an awful lot about it, but
George Moore,
I'm always ready to learn.
24 hours, there's no way a car would stay together that long. So you really pace yourself, and here, there's no stopping.
Well, you, I think the main thing is to try to maintain a speed that suits your type of gearing here, so you can get a nice clean start. Of course, it's immaterial who gets into the first turn and all that right at the start, but as they say, the pole position is a coveted one. It has to be a good spot, you know, you have a nice clear view of the racetrack.
And start on the pole he did. Mario Andretti, USAC national champion from Nazareth, Pennsylvania, lived up to the promise of his practice speed, qualifying at nearly 166 miles per hour, 4.5 miles an hour faster than A.J. Hoyt's record speed in 1965. Californian George Snyder takes the outside position in the first row. Jimmy Clark puts his STP gasoline treatment special next to Andretti in the front row, to the applause of his owner sponsor, Andy Granatelli. J.C. Agajanian and Parnelli Jones, the happy one. Veteran Johnny Boyd in his 12th race. Helmeted Scotsman Jackie Stewart, a rookie. Dan Gurney, charter member of the Rear Engine Club. Roger Ward, solidly in the field for his 15th race at the Speedway after not making it last year. Ward and Stewart's teammate Graham Hill puts the third MECOM Olaf in the field. unhappy one. Greg Wells was having trouble with the 800-plus horsepower Nova. Andy Granatelli works with Greg, drawing on all his racing experience as an Indy driver, car owner, and builder since 1946. The combination of the Novi and the STP Specials, the old and the new, is Granatelli's most determined effort in 20 years to beat the Speedway. This ends the chances of the Novi to qualify. This is the final attempt for others, too. J. Foyt, who totals his Coyote. He climbs the wall, but he doesn't stay there long. Without practice, he jumps into his backup car and qualifies. 15-year veteran Eddie Johnson puts a Valvoline Special 2 in the field that is rapidly filling up. There are only 4 days of qualifications when time and speed are official. 4 laps, 10 miles. Less than 4 minutes on the track to prove a year's work. Al Unser, Jimmy Clark's teammate, in an almost identical car, qualifies his STP Special number 18. Field, for the first time averaging over 160 miles an hour, 4 miles an hour faster than last year, is full. Officials, and relax. Qualifications are over. Over the years, the highest number of starters to go 500 miles was 16. The lowest, 3. The average, 10. This year, 1966, half the field was wiped out less than 10 seconds from the start of the race. After 1 hour and 24 minutes of cleanup, only skid marks remain. The rest is history. It's a new race and a new start. Mario Andretti leads the remaining 17 cars into the first high-speed lap. Single file in the order they qualify. Look out! Johnny Boyd spins! He's all right and hustles off the track. Andretti's mechanic is concerned. Andretti is in trouble.
Clark has moved out in front on the backstretch.
George Schneider loses it. And Chuck Holt falls right into him. Magnificent driving gets everybody by without further incident. The fastest man in Indianapolis history is out with a dropped valve.
I started blowing oil, and then they brought me in. It was no use. This is only one race, and what the heck.
Clark begins to build up a lead as Lloyd Ruby slips inside Carnelli Jones to take second. The race settles down to racing. Relaxes. Chapman nods his approval, and for Granatelli, the elusive victory is within reach. But look out! Jim Clark spins! Stays clear of the wall in traffic! And recovers! Carnelli Jones, the 1963 winner, runs out of car in the same lap. Only 22 laps after his last pit stop, and Clark comes in again. mishap, he's giving away a pit stop to his competition, canceling out a 27-second lead on Ruby and a full lap on the rest of the field. Here comes Ruby taking the lead. Clark charges out. Ruby has a 30-second edge. Clark has to hustle. He's now in the same lap with Stewart and McCluskey running third and fourth. McElreath is fifth. Al Unser is sixth in number 18 STP. And Graham Hill, number 24, is in seventh place, almost a full lap behind, but still a threat. Crews trained in racing keep careful records not only of their own cars, but of the competition. Drivers depend on this information for race strategy. The halfway point, and the laps begin to click away. On the sidelines are not listed in paid attendance statistics, but there is no question there has been a price of admission. The race grinds on. Parnelli Jones can't ride, he can walk. Drivers visit with the fans, and the fans are restless too. There's 450 acres to move around in. Speedway gates open at 5 a.m., and it's been a long day. Some like to eat as they walk, and others just relax and picnic. On the track, there's no let up after 2 hours of racing. The front runners make their final scheduled pit stop. McElreath starts to go and stall. Seconds. Al Unser, in a hustling pit stop directed by the Zanatelli boys, takes just 17 seconds. McElreath finally gets going after almost 2 minutes. A tough break. Here comes Clark. This is his third blistering stop to the others, too. Stewart's running fast in third place, and his chief mechanic, Vignotti, wonders if he can get around before Clark gets out. Away in a record 17 seconds as Stewart roars down the straightaway. It's Ruby's car that's smoking. The battle for the lead is now between Clark and Stewart. Brother Scotts, who are not giving anything away on this speedway. And Stewart passes Clark to run in front. Frantically on the oil leak as USAC officials check. The jovial Scott builds his lead over the flying Scott. And it's no go for Ruby. Bitter disappointment for driver and crew. 400 miles down, 100 miles to go. Trouble in the fourth turn.
The corner lane bust into the inside wall. The car is out in the center of the track. It is either car number 18 or car number 19. Will check
it. Third place runner, Al Unser, number 18.
That moves Graham Hill and car number 24 into the third position now.
Al Unser is unhurt. Stop the action on the back stretch for a moment. From left to right, Clark, number 19, is in second place. McElreath, in the next car, in fourth place, is not in immediate contention for the lead. Next, it's Hill. On the outside, first place Stewart is making his move to lap Clark. When Stewart passes Clark, he'll pick up a lap. When Hill passes Clark, he takes over second place. These are the official standings, but the STP crew and the track announcer both think that Hill is a lap behind and just getting into the same lap with Clark when he makes the pass. The track announcer reverses himself as Chapman and Granatelli are amazed. Not so, they say. Even the Mecum crew for Stewart and Hill is not sure where they are. Hill, number 24, and McElreath, number 3, are running second and fourth.
Jeff Clark gets around Stewart. And now he is in the same lap with the leader.
Confusion is the word. Crew is willing to accept second place, but there is the SDP sign telling Clark he is holding second position. Clark crosses a short chute alone. What's happened to Stewart? Stewart is slowing down.
The number three turn is the race leader. Car number 43 is down below the white line with the power off.
In true road racing fashion, Stewart pushes his car back to the pits. The tower shows number 24 first, number 19 second. The number one board for Hill. The number one board for Clark. Now it's total confusion. Assures his crew that Hill is number one. The checkered flag for Graham Hill.
Graham Hill is car number 24 through 500-mile champion.
Chapman crosses the pit road to cheer Clark on to victory. But it's official for Graham Hill and the Mecum team.
44, as he moves down toward victory lane, and due to the signals given Jim Clark, I would be a bit surprised to see him pull down in there too.
His crew is there already. They still think he won. Graham Hill, somewhat stunned by it all, is pleased. And his crew chief, George McNaughty, is ecstatic in his third win in the last six races. The winner's kiss would seem to make the trip worthwhile.
The car ran beautifully, and naturally I'm very pleased. I think I had a very uneventful run.
Well, I think we've had a hell of a race, and boy, it was certainly full of surprises. I was very, very sorry to see the accident right at the beginning, and a certain amount of confusion during the race, but Graham's the winner at the moment, and I would really wish to congratulate him on that. And I must admit, I was delighted to see at the end three European drivers having a go.
The International 500 comes to an end. Graham Hill of London in a British chassis with the Detroit engine owned by a Texan, John Mecum, sponsored by the American Red Ball Transit Company of Indianapolis, all to the tune of the Indiana State Song, On the Banks of the Wabash.
Free of charge to Channel 23, courtesy of Association Bell.